Well, hi there, folks. Welcome to Stinchfield, brought to you by Midas Gold Group. MidasGoldGroup.com. Now is the time to put your money into precious metals. With all the uncertainty we're seeing in the world, precious metals is the place to put some of your investment money. The folks at Midas Gold Group can help you. MidasGoldGroup.com. All right. Today on the program, we're going to talk a little bit about Twitter. The left's going crazy about Elon Musk saying, oh, Twitter's going to fail. Twitter's going to do this. Twitter's going to be a disaster. Give me a break. It's not true. And then the game plan for Republican congressmen and women running in states with a mail-in ballot scheme. I have the congressman with us who won in a district where everybody said it's impossible to win. His district only had 29% registered Republicans in his district, and this Republican won in California, no less. We are going to talk to him about how he did it and lay out the blueprint for future Republican candidates. And the GOP better pay attention to this interview because Congressman Mike Garcia is showing us how to do it. But with that, before we get into all of it, let's start the program.
Uncensored and unapologetic, this is Stinchfield. Here's your host, Grant Stinchfield.
Well, I appreciate you joining me today. And a special reminder, make sure you go to GrantStinchfield.com, GrantStinchfield.com, to get all your Stinchfield's Army merchandise. Subscribe to the podcast. Of course, please tell your friends and family about this podcast so we get them subscribing. Our numbers go up. Our message gets out there. It's about saving a country. Stinchfield's Army gear helps the word get out as well. Wear how you feel proudly on your chest. GrantStinchfield.com. All right, folks. Listen, Twitter, Elon Musk, I love this guy. You see what he told employees? He told the workers that you better be prepared to be extremely hardcore, work long hours and at a high intensity, and the workers went crazy. And then the media went even crazier. Oh, Twitter's going to fail. He's not going to be able to survive without his workforce. And the advertisers are leaving. 50% of the advertisers have left Twitter. But guess what? Twitter usage now is through the roof. Twitter usage is higher than it has ever been. I'm back on Twitter in many respects. I toiled around with it a little bit when the disaster Dorsey was running Twitter, the old CEO. Now that Elon bought it, though, I'm back. And it seems like my engagement is up. It feels like there's more people talking about Twitter. It feels like usage is up. So even though there may have been some advertisers who left Twitter, here's what I promise you. Advertisers really only care about money in the end. And if Elon Musk can increase the number of eyeballs looking at a Twitter app, if the eyeballs increase, the amount you can charge for advertising goes up. It also will increase the number of advertisers who will want to come there because, listen, they want to put their products and services in front of people. The more people watching, the more people reading, the more people looking, the more people perusing, the more advertisers are going to come. So you liberals need to all calm down. You know, it's very similar, by the way, to this entire idea that liberals can't stand the thought of freedom. So they can't stand the thought of freedom when it comes to Twitter. They certainly can't stand the thought of freedom when it comes to the nation. They want socialism. You tell me one country, one area in the world where socialism lifted people out of poverty. There are none. This is an absolute fact. Capitalism is the only system that has moved people out of poverty. Capitalism is the only system that has pushed nations in a successful manner. All the rest are failing. The United States, look at us. The more we move towards socialist principles, what happens? The more we suffer as a nation. The proof is just in the Biden administration. Well, the proof is going to be in Twitter too. They were running it as a socialist, communist organization, censoring out voices that they didn't like. Twitter was not making any money. Even by Jack Dorsey standards, Twitter was not making money. It was known to be a big loser. So I don't know why the left is now freaking out. Somehow Twitter's losing money. It was always losing money. The question will be, can Elon Musk turn it around? Of course he can. He turned around SpaceX. He founded it, really, and made it so successful. And then, of course, Tesla and other ventures that he's got. This is a successful guy. Don't bet against Elon Musk. The advertisers will flock there. Freedom will take over. More people, including the left, will want to take part in a free exchange of ideas on Twitter, because it'll make it all that much more entertaining. And I've said, the best way to inform is to entertain. I hope we do that on this program. I really do. So I predict that Twitter will become so successful, Elon Musk in 3 to 5 years sells Twitter for 3 times what he paid for it. You hear me? He sells it for 3 times what he paid for it. The left-wing media is not telling you that story. Who are you going to bet on? Me, who's right 95% of the time, or some dope over at CNN or MSNBC? I promise you, put your money on me. Hey, I want to tell you, somebody, if you want to spend some money, My Patriot Cigars. These things are literally unbelievable. So this is my torpedo that I love to smoke. It is a clean, smooth smoke. You can get them at MyPatriotCigars.com, MyPatriotCigars.com. Because I smoked them, I went to them. I said, hey, you guys should advertise on my podcast. I like the product that much, okay? Use the promo code Stinchfield, STINCHFIELD. You get 15% off. MyPatriotCigars.com, MyPatriotCigars.com. Free shipping on orders over $100. Every full box of 20 cigars purchased, you get a $10 e-gift card. Patriot Cigars bring you a premium smoke for freedom-loving patriots. Take it from me. I know this with the cigar in my mouth because I smoke them, okay? Handmade cigars with the best aged tobacco Nicaragua can offer. Promo code Stinchfield, 15% off. Go to MyPatriotCigars.com. That is MyPatriotCigars.com. All right. You know somebody else who's doing things right, who I would not bet against, is a guy by the name of Mike Garcia. He is a congressman going into his second term now. He continues to win in a district where Republicans aren't supposed to win. In a state, California, with a mail-in ballot scheme in place where you're not supposed to win, 29% of his electorate is Republican. I think that's the number. Just 29%. How is he doing it? He's got a game plan. He's doing everything that most Republican candidates are not. And he's winning in a state that is set up for Republicans to lose. He's playing the Democrats' game and he's being victorious at it. I wanted to bring him on the program to get the game plan so this podcast could be used in the future for any GOP candidate running for office on how you win an election in a state where the system is rigged against you, specifically these states where the mass junk mail-in ballot scheme is in place. So with that, I would like to welcome Congressman Garcia to the program. Congressman Mike Garcia, welcome to the program.
Hey, Grant. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, man.
All right. So first off, huge congratulations. You know, you sent me this list of Republicans who won in Democrat districts. You're at the top. Joe Biden was a plus 12 Democrat district in 2020, and you are going to be now over 6 points probably by the time it's done, Republican district. That's amazing in and of itself.
Yeah, you know, it's the end result of really a 2 year, what I call a capture plan, right? At Raytheon, I was an executive at Raytheon for 11 years. My role was to win large programs, large awards, and to compete on the global stage with multiple companies. And so what we referenced was a capture plan, and it was a holistic look on how to win new business. And it was, in this case, applied directly to this campaign. We've been running, obviously, since 2019 in a very blue district, like you said, Biden plus close to 13 points. And so the key is that we ran for literally 2 years. We didn't wait till the last 2 months before the election. It was a persistent presence in the district as a challenger, but also as an incumbent in this last term. And that's the secret. I think people have got to realize that these endeavors are not, you know, 6 weeks, 9 weeks, not even 9 months. It's literally a 2 year full time gig. And when you look at it through that paradigm and you look at it as a capture plan with all the ingredients, and we'll talk about some of that, I'm sure, today. But that's coming at it from the right paradigm.
All right. So what I want everyone to understand is Congressman Mike Garcia is running constantly in a blue district in California, of all places. So, Congressman, I've said that we need a paradigm shift from a Republican standpoint in how we look at elections. We talk about turning out the vote, but in states like Arizona and Pennsylvania and California, We have to start looking at turning out the ballots, which is different from turning out the vote.
That's right. Yeah. Traditionally, you know, most conservatives will vote on election day, right? That's just what they do. They see it as part of the pomp and circumstance of an election to show up in person, which is fine. We still see a lot of that. But what I've been pushing within our campaign with our volunteers when we go canvassing, when we make phone calls, you know, and in California, it's a land of not quite right when it comes to election laws, right? We got a 30-day window for vote by mail. Everyone gets a vote by mail universally, whether they ask for it or not. There's no voter ID. And then there's about a 10 to 12 day window to vote in person. And what we push for is, as one of our strategies was try to get as much support as early as we can so that we do show a level of strength that sort of takes the appetite away from folks like Nancy Pelosi. And it's okay to be down in a blue district, especially as a Republican in those early weeks. But if you're within a certain percentage and within a certain margin of ballots, you're showing a level of strength which frankly deters them from investing. And that's literally what happened in our race, right? We did convince enough conservatives and enough middle third independent, no party preference folks to show up early. And after those early returns started coming in and after some of the polling data came in, Nancy Pelosi saw the data and decided to not fund my opponent to the, you know, the tune of she basically put in about $20 million against me in 2020. And this year it was, you know, less than 500K all said and done. Wow. So that early strength does matter. It's counterintuitive to us as conservatives. We don't necessarily trust the vote by mail. But in California, you can track your ballot. You can see when it's been accepted. You can see when it's been counted. And so there is still some ambiguity, some, you know, distrust there embedded in that whole process. But you do get a warm fuzzy that at least your ballot was counted.
All right. So you actively pushed for your supporters to mail their ballot in.
Correct. And eyes wide open that we're going to lose that war. Right. We would go knock on someone's door, and I personally would be at someone's door, you know, 3 weeks before Election Day saying, hey, I would appreciate it if you could go in person in a few days and vote in person on the first day. And they would go, oh, no, that's, you know, we're voting on Election Day. And I would explain to them everything I just mentioned. And maybe a quarter of them would actually go do that. But to your point, it's a paradigm shift. And with all cultural shifts or paradigm shifts, it takes a few years, a few iterations to convince folks, and it's water over rock kind of mentality. But look, these are the rules of the game here, especially in California. It's not changing. It's going to be universal vote by mail. They just passed the laws to that effect. So we have to learn how to play by those rules and adopt them. And as candidates, try to impart some sort of motivation level in the voters to vote early. And like you said, my district is only 29% Republican, right? So I have to message to that middle third on a lot of these things as much as I message to my base. And that's something that we can't be afraid to do. And I'll caveat everything that we're talking about today is really appropriate for swing districts or swing states if you're running for a state level. If you're in an R+30 district in Georgia, you know, you probably don't need to be doing all the things I'm talking about here.
Yeah, this is how to win districts that are tight in states where it is not set up for Republicans. And let's face it, I believe Democrats rigged the system in favor of themselves in California, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, some of these other states. They rigged the system with, I call it a junk mail-in ballot scheme, which then means you do have to figure out a way to turn out the ballot more than turn out the vote. Did you have a ballot harvesting operation in place? And I'll preface this by saying it is as scary and as illegal as that sounds. In California, ballot harvesting is perfectly legal. So yeah, right. Did you have an operation in place?
Yeah, we did. It wasn't sort of what you would traditionally think. The Democrats in 2018 did a good job of, you know, going door to door, and they created relationships between their volunteers and the voters at their doorsteps. It's a longer courtship. We do that, but typically what happens is after you visited a Republican's door for, you know, three or four times over the course of 3 months, if you ask them, hey, can I take your ballot? They'll still tell you to pack sand. I'm not giving you my ballot. I'm going to go vote, or I'll drop it off myself. That's just how Republicans work. So from a ballot harvesting perspective, my focus was on finding out where our weaknesses were in our voting demographic, right? And this went back to 2018 as well. Something like 70% of evangelicals didn't vote in the 2018 general election, which is shameful, but shocking, right? I couldn't believe it. And Craig Huey did a nice job of capturing that data for us in my district, proved that was the case. And so I focused on the churches, especially that first 2 years of running as a challenger with not in the incumbency, going to every church in my district as frequently as I could to build that trust with the pastor, the priest, the leadership in the church. Eventually got to the point where we were able to speak to the congregations. And so this is something that is unique to conservatives. There's not too many Democrats right now, especially in California, running that are willing to go and frankly, go to church and build these relationships. They get asked hard questions that they don't want to answer. And so what we were able to do was allow the churches to start helping us get out the vote, get out the ballot, as you would say, that they have to engage if they care about the issues that they preach about. You have to also civically engage and be part of the voting process. That was a huge part of it.
I would assume, and we're talking with Congressman Mike Garcia, Republican from Southern California, who won in a district that was almost plus 13 Joe Biden in 2020, and he wins by 6 points, could be even more when it's all said and done this time around. And he did it by doing things differently than everyday Republicans do it. When you talk about the churches, how hard was it to recruit the pastors to come in and talk about politics? Because I tell pastors all the time, you need to start to talk about politics. Forget this idea that somehow it's illegal. That is not the case at all. And I think pastors misunderstand the law on that front. And then would they actually take the ballot from their congregation? I get it might be easier for a pastor to say, hey, put your ballot in this basket than it is for somebody that shows up on your doorstep. You don't know who they are.
Yeah. And so it definitely does. It's a courtship, right? I would go have coffee with some of the pastors so they get to know me personally. They don't want to put a candidate up at the pulpit that's going to go off the rails and start, basically dividing their own congregation. That's it's a business for them, too. They still have to have folks attend church, and they don't want a political candidate disrupting that. So it is a longer term courtship, but they are willing to now. A lot of folks, and still to this day in my district, there's some church leaders that they misinterpret the Johnson Amendment, the separation of church and state, and what they can say. As long as they're not advocating and basically endorsing a candidate at the pulpit, it's allowed. So a lot of them have gotten more comfortable with it. There's a lot of issues and a lot of examples of candidates you can point to and go, hey, when you don't engage, we end up with Katie Hill. When you don't engage, we end up with these policies and you go through that list with them. So in the end, we had churches literally have drop boxes either at their churches or nearby their churches. And the pastors, the priests, after their sermons would say, hey, don't forget to vote. Today is the first day of in-person voting. A lot of LA County's in-person voting centers were actually located on church grounds, right? So there's no excuse for evangelicals not to vote. And so from a ballot harvesting perspective, when you're farming, it doesn't matter how you extract the fruit. The only thing that matters is you're getting the fruit out of the ground. And in this case, we saw higher evangelical voter turnout. And so those strategies work well.
All right, take me through, and we're talking with Congressman Mike Garcia, Republican, Southern California. Take me through this idea. And as a business owner myself, as someone who loves the idea of business, and that's what really a campaign is. Your customers are really your constituents, right? In the end, that's who you're serving. You're at Raytheon. You have all this. That's like the biggest business there is at Raytheon. You take that acumen and transfer it to the campaign. Give me an example of something you figured out from a business perspective that would work in the campaign.
Well, I was charged with, selling $3 million radars. We'd sell 200 or 300 of these radars to a nation or to the U.S. government. And so very high-end equipment, very expensive, a lot of diligence and proposal writing that goes into it. It's the same process in this case running for Congress, except now you're the product, right? So you have to build the relationship with the customer earlier. And this is when I say it's a 2-year process. If you're a candidate first starting off, you need to be going to the local chamber of commerce events. You need to be talking to the local elected officials right now. If you plan on running in 2024, now's the time to be having those conversations, putting a name to a face for them and letting them get to know you, get comfortable with it. You're building a 2-year value proposition, basically. And you're basically going against someone who's an incumbent, right, which is already a seated member of Congress with brand name ID, with in many cases millions of dollars in the bank. And so you're really a David and Goliath kind of story. You're starting a franchise akin to trying to knock off Starbucks as a little coffee shop. Mm-hmm. And so they have to get to know you as the product, but understand how you're going to help them. And beyond that, how you're going to win. You have to have that capture plan. You need to have your metrics and goals in terms of fundraising. You need to be spending 20 to 30 hours a week making phone calls to donors early on, and each quarter going from $250K the first quarter to $500K the first quarter. And in California, you've got to raise $1 million a quarter, which is a lot of money, but it's necessary to be competitive. So no one's going to invest in your brand name, you as the product, if you can't show that winning plan on how you're going to not only communicate where you are on the policies, but also how you're going to pay for what's potentially $1 million, you know, $5 million campaign in some cases.
And I want to ask you about where that money gets spent on, because I think times are changing, especially depending on what district you're in, on where you spend money. One district TV might work great. Another district mail might work great. Another district, maybe it's none of those things. Maybe it's just sending people to go walk doors for you. So I want to talk to you about that. There's the idea of consultants as well. I'm big on this idea of cut the old-fashioned GOP consultant who's literally getting rich off of candidates. These consultants are taking in millions of dollars and they're losing, which is what's the craziest. So I want to talk about that in a moment. Speaking of good consultants, though, Mike, I know you've heard me talk about these guys. Midas Gold Group. Now, I do believe there is a war on cash going on in America today. I look at the IRS, which has been weaponized. They've got 87,000 IRS agents now, mostly coming for conservatives. If you want to protect your finances, your savings, your nest egg, it is a good idea to put some of that money into precious metals. And I'm talking about gold. Midas Gold Group can help you do it. I'm investing with them myself, MidasGoldGroup.com. MidasGoldGroup.com. The number is 855-322-GOLD, 855-322-GOLD. These are patriots. These are good guys. You can trust them above all. I know you can trust them because I'm using them. So MidasGoldGroup.com, pay them a visit. All right, Mike, with that, where do you spend the money? You heard me talk about cut the consultants. There's a company called Axiom. I don't know if you used them or not. I've never run this by you, so I don't know your answer on this. Company called Axiom. $50 million was spent with Axiom the last time around. They have a win rate percentage of 55%. They're GOP consultants. This model of consultants, I think, is bad news. You got to cut the middleman out and spend your money wisely. What was your campaign like as far as consultants go?
I interviewed a lot of consultants early on, and especially in the first 3 or 4 months as I was doing my feasibility studies. You know, is this district winnable? Am I the guy that can win it? I spent 3 months looking at all of that data, but I farmed data from the consultants. So I kind of used them in some ways. I told them, hey, here's the race. Here's the gal I'm running against. It was Katie Hill at the time. Here's my plan. Here's where I am on my platform and messaging. Had them come in and interview for the jobs. They would bring me data on my district, give me recommendations on how you win. And you get a sense of who's got their program together, who knows the district and who's sort of an outsider looking in. I had some ridiculous proposals, either way too expensive or just ridiculous marketing plans and ideas. I landed on the top-notch consultant early on. I still have him to this day as a general consultant. And then I'm blessed to have the best finance director, the best strategy director on my team as well. And these are folks that know my district. These are folks that know the history of my district. They know my donors very well, and they have relationships. It's not drive-bys where they show up 6 weeks before the election asking for money. They literally go have lunch, 3 months after the election with our donors, and they maintain those relationships. So I have a first-class team. It's a small team, but it's a full-time thing. I don't let them go and then rehire them as we get closer. And so we caucus on every issue. We talk about branding and messaging on everything. I don't stray from my principles. I stay true to my core values, anchored to what I call the four C's, right? The Constitution, capitalism, competition, and charity. And I can literally have a conversation or debate on any given topic anchored to one of those four C's. But the consultants understand that. They agree with those things, and they're not trying to have me go down different paths. So it's very important that you get someone who understands your district that isn't doing this for the money. I would say 95% of the consultants out there have ulterior motives besides just winning and helping you getting elected. So you've got to rely on your messaging and your hard work. And in the end, there's no substitute for hard work, and you've got to make it rain longer than your opponents can tread water.
So what did you spend money on as far as turning out the vote? Do you do mail? Do you do TV? You're in Los Angeles. It's a very expensive market to do TV in, especially for a congressional race. There's not a lot of media coverage on congressional races, typically. So what do you spend your money on?
I do all of the above. I mean, I'm blessed to be in a position where we're raising $8 million a cycle, you know, $8 to $10 million over the last three elections, each election. So we do all of the above. Even in the LA media market, I still run ads on TV when the Dodgers are in the World Series or in the playoffs for a hot minute. We have commercials on there. That's a gold-plated campaign. If you can't do that, you still need to do the mailers. But you've got to take the time to look at the universe that you're sending the mailers to. A lot of consultants won't take the time to go through and sort of sanitize the list and make sure that they're actually targeting mail pieces to the right households. My consultants do that. The digital ads are very important right now, sort of a persistent presence. Every time that 18, 19-year-old opens up his phone and sees YouTube or any social media app, your advertisement should be on there, at least combating the left's message against you if you're a conservative. We do everything. We do all of the above. Radio ads. We have been on the radio basically for 36 months straight. Even in the off season, I've got ads up on radio. And so we do all of the above. But you've got to look at every candidate's got to look at their district. Not everyone's going to be able to afford TV. But you also have to look at your opponent, right? You don't need to have the gold plated campaign. You don't need to beat Mike Garcia. You just need to beat your opponent. And in some cases, a lot of these Democrats are anemic with their fundraising or they're terrible with their messaging or they're wrong on the policies. You've got to study your opponent, find out where their weaknesses are, and then make your weaknesses your strengths and make your strengths something that no one else can compete with. And if you understand your opponent relative to your position above all things, you're going to win.
The problem is to me is they're also great at cheating. It seems like they just keep counting votes until they win. At least that's the feeling when you look around the country, and something's got to be done about that. But until we can do something about that, I mean, look, California's not going to change. Democrats are in charge of that for a long time. So you got to figure out how to operate within the rigged system. And so that's what Congressman Mike Garcia is doing. Mike.
Yeah, you've got to do, I'll give you an example, right? You talk about things that feel dirty but are legal in California. There's this phenomenon, not just ballot harvesting, but called curing of the ballots, right? You can get some notice from the county saying, hey, your ballot wasn't counted because your signature didn't match. And the campaigns have access to that data, and the campaigns can actually go out and contact those voters after election day, up to, I think, 30 days after election day, and say, hey, Mrs. Smith, your ballot wasn't counted. Can you fill out this form, sign this form for us? We'll turn it in for you and make sure that your vote gets counted. Sounds dirty, but it's legal in California. We did that about 700 times in the 30 days that they were counting my ballots in 2020's election. We went out and cured roughly 700 ballots. And that particular election, we won by only 333 votes. So if we didn't have our volunteers doing that, if we just dismissed and said, hey, this is wrong, we're not going to do this, we would have lost and we wouldn't have been there now in this cycle as well.
Yeah, it's amazing. You won by just 300 votes the first election. I guess that was 2020. And then then now you're going to be up by at least 6% in a district where Joe Biden won in the same time you won by 300. He won by almost 13 points. So we're talking with Congressman Mike Garcia. He is a Republican congressman from California and really is changing the way you run elections in these states where the system and the demographics are stacked against you and still winning. And he's done it better than anybody else in the country. When you look at his overall flip rate, Congressman Garcia was the top of the list for all Republicans. You and I talk. One of the things that I love about you, you come on the radio every week with us on our L.A. morning show. One of the things is that I love about you is you stay true to your conservative values. You did not move somehow to the center. You did not go wishy-washy. There's not one thing that I can remember where I was angry at you for something. And there's a lot of congressmen, even Republicans, lots of them. I'm angry at them for something. You've stayed true in a blue district, not even a moderate district, in a blue district, what is your message to other candidates that want to move to the center, recruit those on the left by being squishy?
If you don't vote your conscience, that's going to be transparent to the voters. I sleep well at night because every vote I take aligns to the four C's I talked about: the Constitution, capitalism, competition, and charity. I don't come off of those. And it's not necessarily all intuitive votes, right? There's some votes I take sometimes where people go, "Hey, wow, I didn't expect you to do that." But when I explain it to them from a constitutional perspective, they go, "Oh, that makes sense." But you've got to be able to sleep at night, and you've got to be able to continue to be your own brand name and stay true to your core values. As soon as you compromise your core values, then you've lost. Politicians lose because of that. By the way, a politician is someone who can't make money in the real world, right? So you don't ever want to be a politician, even when you're an elected official. You've got to stay true to your core values. And in my case, I don't have tough votes. I see a lot of folks sitting on the floor on some of these votes going, "Oh man, hand wringing. Am I going to say yes, Mike? What should I do? Here's my district." And I go, "What do you believe in?" And there's no tough votes. There's longer conversations sometimes after you vote. And in a blue district like mine, I've got to go back to my district and communicate with my constituents a lot. And when you do that, a lot of them will ultimately agree with it, even though they disagreed initially. And if they don't agree with it, they don't hate you. At least they don't have this emotional vitriol towards you, and they end up still voting for you despite the fact that you voted on an issue differently than they believe. And so there's not tough votes. There's just longer conversations. And I think that's the important thing, is if you're going to change who you are, if you're going to change your principles and your votes, you're going to alienate your base. You're going to alienate the people that voted for you, and you're not going to attract support from the middle third or the Democrats by doing that. So, I think being true to your principles at the foundation of all this.
I try to tell candidates that the hardcore Democrat is never going to vote for you. So moving closer to the center somehow is not going to flip some hardcore Democrat. I don't even believe there's independence anymore, Mike. I truly believe that people know what party. There is such a difference between Republicans and Democrats. How you're in the middle today, I have no idea. I think independents, especially in California, are those who lean Republican but just don't want to admit it. And I think trying to appease somebody who doesn't even know what they believe, which is really those that are probably in the middle, is a bad move. And in the end, you've got to motivate your ultimate base to turn out and vote for you. I tell a story about a woman, a very good friend of mine, who ran for state representative in Dallas. She's in the district that Pete Sessions used to have in Dallas. That's the Congress now. He's in a different district. But Colin Allred, the former NFL football player, Democrat, beat Pete and has this district where I live. So it's a blue district now. It's like most big cities. It's changed. She moved so far to the center. Not only did she not recruit Democrats, when I was out standing by the polls for her, and I really was doing this because I was a friend of hers more than anything else, and she's certainly better than the Democrats she was running against, there were so many Republicans she had ticked off. So many older Republican women's clubs were coming to me and says, I just don't like her because she's not a real Republican. She's a rhino. Boy, you ruin it from all sides when you sacrifice and try to move to the center.
Yeah, you can't advertise yourself as something and then change who you are and how you vote once you get in office. That backfires every time. Folks who lost their elections this last cycle because they voted to impeach Donald Trump, I remind people they lost their elections by one vote. It was that one vote that alienated their base, and many of them didn't come back to Congress. Most of them didn't because of it. In my district, though, for instance, I only have 29% who are registered as Republican. So there is a middle third that, while they consistently vote for a conservative, they don't like the Republican Party for whatever reason. Some of them were hardcore Republicans like yourself that just get a disillusioned with the party. They get frustrated that they're not able to play by, MMA rules. They keep playing by Queen's rules and getting their butts kicked every election. So why associate yourself with that group of folks that keep losing? But I am a conservative at heart, right? So I think the key is that we've got to engage that middle third and inspire them to vote. There's a lot of folks in the middle third that only care about one or two issues. You've got to engage. That's why we go knock on doors and make phone calls, find out what that issue is, and then have that closed feedback loop with them so that they know, here's what Mike is doing to support that issue. because some of them don't, you know, have clear bifurcations down party lines. We just got to, you got to actually remember that that issue exists for them, and they'll vote for you.
All right, I want to continue that topic in just a moment, but first I want to talk about Sierra Pacific Mortgage, andrewandtodd.com. I don't need to tell the congressman, I don't need to tell all of you that the Fed is literally totally unstable. Interest rates could go up again at any moment. However, there is a positive to this. The higher rate environment is the cost of entry into a less competitive market. That will benefit you as a buyer. So here's what you need to do. If you're relocating, you need to buy a new home, or if you want to invest in real estate, get fully underwritten and approved with Andrew Del Rey and Todd Avakian at Sierra Pacific Mortgage before you make an offer, okay? Before you make that offer, when you get approved with them, it'll be the next best thing to cash. Their fast-track approval process will allow you to compete with cash offers. Whether you're buying today, tomorrow, or a year from now, then once interest rates come down, Andrew and Todd at andrewandtodd.com will refinance you into a lower rate and payment. Even though housing prices are stabilizing or coming down, supply chain issues and limited construction means the real estate market is limited and still competitive. So here's what you need to do. Take it from me. I know these guys. I love these guys. AndrewandTodd.com. AndrewandTodd.com. Go there right now. Get fully approved today so you will have the money ready to go when you are ready to buy. Do not wait. Go to AndrewandTodd.com. This is a technical question, but how do you find that middle third to go knock on their doors if they haven't voted? Are they registered? Are they registered as independents? Do you see they voted in some Democrat election, some Republican? You know, this is all basic. Well, they're jungle primaries, so you even have a harder time knowing who they voted for, correct?
That's right. The data's tough to use. It's not trued up to reality. People are moving. You know, people are dying. So the databases are accurate only to some percentile. It's not 100%. The best way to do it is to engage in your community. I mean, especially in the early days, in the first 2 years when I was running as a candidate, I would have meet and greets with 15 to 50 people in someone's living room. Right. This was someone that was a volunteer initially, and that begets, you know, 5 to 10 more meet and greets. And when you do that, 50 to 100 times with that many people, the word does start getting out, and you do start getting a followership, and it starts at the grassroots. When you overlay that on with real fundraising, and you can actually go out and do the digital advertising, you can do, local advertising in your community, radio, et cetera. People will start paying attention, and they may not show up in any database or registration role, but they will start paying attention to it.
You know, I would tell this to candidates too. Like I said, and we're talking with Mike Garcia, Republican congressman from Southern California, who more than any other Republican congressman outperformed his district by huge numbers. I think, what was it, 20% flip? Is that right?
Close to 20, that. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is amazing. You come on the radio with us every week. I know it's probably a chore at times. We do have fun, though, when you come on. I think there's a lot of members of Congress out there that look at media as a chore. And we are media. We're conservative media. We're friendly media. Right. But that consistency, and I would tell any congressman, if you could find your local talk radio host and you can become a regular member of their family, because that's what talk radio really is. It's a family. Our listeners are family. We're in their car every day. They feel like they know us. We feel like we know them. You become characters that come on the show. We've got callers that are, if you can become part of that family, that goes a long way for not just name recognition, but really getting the most compelling and engaged portion of your constituents on your side.
Yeah. You become a person. You guys do a nice job of humanizing your guests as well. And so, first of all, I want to thank you guys for allowing me to come on every week. That's a massive lift and tailwind, especially to conservatives in the LA County area who listen to your show.
Would you recommend it to others?
Yeah, absolutely. As long as they prepare for it, right? Even though I do this every week with you guys, I still spend an hour preparing for that radio hit. I know you guys are friendly. I know you guys are conservatives, but I still research. And my counsel to all candidates and incumbents is is treat the media like a loaded weapon, right? I like shooting, but I still, every time I go shooting, I treat that loaded weapon with respect. It can harm you as quickly as it can help you. And even conservative radio shows or Fox News can do a lot of damage if you're not ready, if you're not caught up on the issues, or if you haven't done your homework on the hosts and what their key careabouts are and where they're going to go with this interview. You can jackass yourself pretty quickly. And so you got to take the media very seriously. And there are ways to engage local radio. I do local radio in the city of Santa Clarita as well. It's very useful to the point that you made. But you've got to prepare for it. And what happens is someone has a bad experience, they get turned off by it, and they stop engaging. And the way you prevent that from happening is you prepare for it.
Yeah. Well, you're always prepared. We never really give you the topics. We kind of are always flying by the seat of our pants, but truth is that's the best way.
I enjoy that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I do too. Well, that's the fighter pilot, and you can't really prepare for a dogfight because you don't know what the guy's going to do. You can train and you can do all those things, but, you never know what's coming at you. And Mike Garcia was a fighter pilot and really a great patriot, great congressman, and a good friend of mine. Anything else you want candidates to know? Because that's really what I want. I want candidates to watch this interview to figure out how you won and then replicate that in districts that are set up like yours, not favorable to Republicans. Is there anything else?
Yeah, I think, you know, you need to build your own brand name. You can't rely on the party machine. I've told my team since day one, when we win, it's going to be because of our team and what we do. I don't want to be reliant on the RNC or the GOP. I appreciate their support and I welcome it. But I can't be woefully dependent on that. So it all comes down to your hard work. You've got to make it rain longer than your opponents tread water. I've had 23 opponents in the last 36 months. I've had 6 elections, and we have never had the ability to take our foot off the pedal. But if we did, we would lose. And so you got to keep it, the afterburners plugged in 2 years every time you're running. And I would also recommend reading Sun Tzu's Art of War, right? There's a lot of things in there that are directly applicable to this very Hobbesian world called running for Congress. You've got to know you're a winner before you actually engage in the fight. The losers will figure out they've lost somewhere in the middle of the battle. You've got to know your opponent's strengths and weaknesses, and everything that you do has got to be anchored to that. So other than that, you build a good team around you. You stay true to your core principles. You spend every day working as hard as you can, and you don't take anything for granted. And if you do that, you'll prevail. But also, there's no nobility in running against an incumbent. Even I have my limitations. I'm not going to go, run in a Democrat plus 40 seat somewhere and have aspirations of flipping that. A man's got to know his limitations.
Yeah. I don't know if you knew this. I ran for Congress 10 years ago.
I did, yeah. In Texas,
yep. Yeah. I ran a Republican primary against a rhino, to say the least. His name was Kenny Marchant. And to his credit, I will tell you this, I thought what would happen was I could sneak up on him. I was raising, back then I raised about $500,000, which is a lot of money against an incumbent, especially in North Texas. There's a lot of oil money here. It's old style politics. But people were fed up with him. And this was before all the PAC money stuff was just kind of starting out. And I thought I'd sneak up on him and he wouldn't take me seriously. And man, from day one, that man took me seriously. He spent money on me. He attacked me. He went after me. He turned me into the local tax office for ridiculous stuff. But to his credit, that's the game of politics. He didn't sit back. He knew he had a fight on his hands, and he ended up winning. I think it was 60-40. So I got smoked, but it was a heck of an experience. Yeah. And he took me seriously. Always take your competition seriously.
Amen to that. Yeah, those are good words to live by right there. And if you don't, you're gonna get surprised. You're either surprising someone or getting surprised in this game. And you always want to be the hammer, not the nail.
Well, you're living by my new saying. My new saying is always be ready, so you don't have to get ready.
That's right. Yep. Exactly right. Well said.
Congressman Mike Garcia, it's great having you on the program. Congratulations on your victory out there, and it's always, always good to talk to you.
Thanks, Grant. I appreciate it. Thanks for everything you do, and happy to do this anytime.
All right, before you go, let me remind everybody else out there, grantstinchfield.com. Spread that website. You can subscribe to Apple, Spotify, Rumble, YouTube, all the outlets for this podcast, grantstinchfield.com. And of course, Stinchfield's Army merchandise. I'm not wearing my great t-shirts, but it makes a great Christmas gift. We got that coming up as well. Grantstinchfield.com, grantstinchfield.com. Thanks so much, everybody, for watching. Stinchfield's Army rolls. Congressman Garcia, thank you as well.
Thanks,
see you back here.
We'll see you.
You got it. Bye. All right. Oh.